Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoke, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday morning here in the city. A little bit cooler than they said it was going to be. What happened to that 70 degrees that was supposed to be yesterday? Who knows? As you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Some interesting events to talk to you about during the course of the program today. We're going to visit with our friends from the Lyric Opera once again. Then later on in the program, we're going to talk to the native sons and daughters of Kansas City about their annual banquet that they have coming up to honor Alvin Brooks, by the way, coming up later in the program. But first, the opera. You know, the opera can do some amazing things. You know, it's the opera is more than just people standing in Viking hats on the stage singing. And we're going to talk today about an actual event that was turned into an opera, an event that happened in 1996. People were climbing Mount Everest, and I want to give it away. Certain complications arise, and two gentlemen are here, both singers from the Lyric Opera. They are the two climbers in question. Craig Verma is with us. He is a baritone. He plays the role of Doug Hansen. He has sung with the Des Moines Metro Opera, the Santa Fe Opera, the Lyric Opera Chicago. He originated this role of Doug Hansen in the Dallas Opera. He has also sung in Europe and in the Netherlands as well. Andrew Bidlack is with us as well. He is a tenor. He plays the role, or I should say, sings the role of Rob Hall. He is the leader of this expedition, and Opera News has named him one of the 25 brilliant artists. Hard to live by, isn't it? hard to live up to something like that once they name you one of the top 25.
Yeah, I guess people are really paying attention when you get a headline like that.
I know. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
And you too, Craig.
Thank you.
Happy to be here. Well, based on actual events.
Absolutely. That's one of the exciting things we're doing in opera these days is bringing current events to the limelight and trying to bring in current audiences, break down the stereotypes that most people have about opera and show that it's really a vibrant, current art form that can be enthralling and rapturing and really leave people excited and just emotionally spent. This opera is so exciting. It's not a very long opera. It's only 75 minutes. There's not an intermission. And from the moment the orchestra starts playing, the audience is just grabbed. And you don't get let go until the opera's over. And from our experience of doing this in Dallas, the audience just, at first, I think, caught their breath. And then just leapt to their feet and started roaring with not only applause, but just yelling in ecstatic praise. This is one of the most thrilling performances, productions I've ever been a part of.
What were the circumstances? They were one of, I guess, many people who were climbing Mount Everest, the tallest mountain in the world.
Absolutely.
If you don't know, ladies and gentlemen.
So in 1996, there were many, many expeditions going up on both the south and north side of Everest. And our opera focuses on one expedition team led by Rob Hall. And he had an incredible track record of safety and also of summit success. And there, one of his team members, one of his clients actually, was the author John Krakauer. He was a very experienced mountaineer himself. He had not been above 8,000 meters, however, which is quite a threshold for mountaineers. It's very, very high altitude. Almost everybody has to use oxygen at that level. And it's also called the death zone. Even with oxygen, any amount of time spent above 8,000 meters, you are actively dying. Mm. Your body is shutting down because there's so little oxygen. So the protagonist in this opera is the mountain, the altitude, and the weather. And Rob Hall is leading this expedition up including John Krakauer. I need to circle back to him for a second. He was there basically representing Outside Magazine. He was doing an article about the commercialization of Mount Everest. until the 90s, mountaineering was an elitist club. It was only done by the most experienced climbers. And then people like Rob Hall and Scott Fisher, who was leading another expedition, a United States-based group, and we had clients paying $65,000 in 1996 for somebody to take them up the mountain. And you would hire Sherpas to fix the lines and carry up oxygen bottles, carry up all of your gear, and you basically just had to follow the ropes and walk up. Still very grueling, but most of the clients were in their 40s and 50s. You had some 60-year-olds. And so the opera kind of focuses on, and also this article that John Krakauer wrote about, and then it turned into a very famous book called Into Thin Air, all focuses on how all of these different pieces of the puzzle came together to create a perfect storm. And as anybody who knows the story will know that a storm, a blizzard, blows in from below, and while they're on the summit and while people are coming down, and the storm envelops them, and 8 people lost their life in one night, and 12 over that climbing season. And up until that time, it was the worst tragedy that had happened in one climbing season on Everest.
Yes. Yeah, so have you seen that film footage that I have? Someone took, once they reached the very summit, they took some film of them. And it's a very narrow, I mean, there's a flatter area right before you go up the final, however high it was. And there's just a real narrow space to stand on, and they were taking film of each one of them standing on that narrow space, which was actually the summit.
Yeah, you're only up there for just a few minutes before you come down, because
just long enough to take a picture.
Absolutely.
Getting up there is half the battle, and getting down is much harder, and that's why they ran into trouble, because a lot of people were able to get up the mountain, but getting down the mountain, especially when the weather deteriorated, was created a lot of roadblocks for them and made it a life or death situation, basically.
Now, you're singing the role of Rob Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And did he always do Everest? Did he do other mountains too? What got him into that business?
Yeah, well, Rob climbed all over the world. I mean, he was one of the premier athletes out of New Zealand, really. And from what I understand, when you're a climber, a professional climber like that, you have to sort of keep upping the ante and doing harder and more difficult climbs in order to secure corporate sponsorship. And he and his partner...
oh, gosh, I don't remember.
What's his name?
Well, yeah, he had a nice partner, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. They decided to keep mountaineering but start a guiding business called Adventure Consultants in order to keep doing what they loved but make it lucrative and maybe less dangerous in the end. So, and Adventure Consultants became the gold standard of Everest climbing. Rob's group was the safest, and he made it to the mountain frequently, and his clients frequently made it up the mountain, and it was one of the more expensive ones, and there was a reason for that. It's because it was a very well-run expedition, and he was so experienced in that area that, at the base camp of Everest, he was sort of the mayor of base camp or whatever, when people would go to him for advice and consult with him about how they were going to plan the summit days and everything, logistics and stuff like that.
He had also climbed the mountain with his wife, Jan.
That's right. Jan was, who is also a character in the opera played by mezzo-soprano Sarah Larson, was another person with lots of high-altitude experience. I think their first date was Mount McKinley or something like that. They met on Mount Everest when she was working in base camp, and she joined at least one or two of his expeditions as the doctor at base camp.
But this season, she was not climbing because...
Because she was pregnant with their first daughter. So she stayed at home in New Zealand while he went away.
When she heard the news, I'm sure she was quite concerned.
It's basically the emotional crux of the entire opera. It's the moment where there will be many tears shed in the audience. It's the entire unfolding of the opera, of the story, is tragic. And mind-blowing. There's one survivor out of the four main singers. Two. Jan and Beck Weathers. Rob and my character, Doug Hansen. Rob Parrish is trying to save Doug. And we both freeze to death. And actually, our bodies are still up there on the mountain because it's too difficult to bring bodies back down. You will perish yourself trying to bring somebody down. And that's proven by what Rob did. He refused to leave Doug behind, even though everybody on the radio was urging Rob, leave Doug behind. If you don't, you will die. But he didn't. He desperately tried to save Doug, and that's shown beautifully in the opera.
Mm-hmm.
But we also see a scene between Rob and Jan where they are connected with a radio and a satellite phone.
Yes, so they were trying to convince Rob to come down the mountain, as Craig said, and they thought that maybe by calling Jan to give him some extra motivation to, you know, leave Doug behind and hurry up and get down because the storm was getting much worse at that point, that it would help spur him along. And the crux is they had one last phone call. Rob was on his radio up at the South Summit, talking to a person at the base camp who had a satellite phone calling New Zealand. And so they had this heart-wrenching conversation that just about everybody on the mountain heard.
Because it was on the radio waves.
Because it was on the radio waves, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was a very tragic and emotional ending.
So the rest of the opera focuses on a Dallas pathologist named Beck Weathers. Mm-hmm. And he is a client who has had a lot of climbing experience. He's been climbing for 10 years, and he is chasing, or rather trying to escape, severe depression. And he finds that escape through extreme physical labor, and through climbing. And he attempts Everest with the guide services of Rob Hall. And he loses his sight on the way up because he had an early form of LASIK surgery and his corneas didn't adapt well to the altitude, which was an unknown side effect at the time. And so he essentially went blind. Rob Hall said, stay here. Don't move. I'm going to go summit. I'm going to come down and I'll bring you down the mountain. So Beck Weathers stays put. And Rob goes up. Other people are coming down, pass by Beck, say, hey, Beck, what's wrong? Like, let's go down. There's a storm coming. Let's go. And Beck says, no, I'm sticking. Rob said he's going to come for me. Mm-hmm. I need to stay here. And finally, Rob never comes. Finally, another guide convinces Beck to come down, and with another group now, a mix of Scott Fisher's team and Rob Hall's team, and they're all freezing to death on the South Col and trying to find Camp 4, which is a very, very high camp, but they need shelter from the storm. And Beck passes out from hypothermia, and he goes into a hypothermic coma. And so a lot of the opera actually takes place inside of Beck's mind. And you see medical slides projected on the mm-hmm. stage, and you get transported to a barbecue in his backyard and all these different things, and you hear about his depression. It's fascinating. And miraculously, Beck wakes up and escapes the mountain. I feel like I'm giving too much away, but this opera, the quality of all the different aspects, the compositional aspect. Joby Talbot is the composer. He's a well-known ballet and film score composer. I think he's working on his second opera now, if I'm not mistaken. It's brilliant music. The orchestra is the voice of the mountain, and it is haunting and thrilling. Uses percussion instruments I had no idea even existed. The set is mind-blowing. We're all in harnesses and roped up and clipped into the set, and we rappel, and we're in a vertical world, and the conductor is phenomenal. The director is incredible. It's amazing. you really, really need to come see this show.
So the show is called Everest. It's a presentation of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. It'll open on Saturday, November the 11th at 7:30 p.m. Performances then continue on Wednesday the 15th at 7:30, Friday the 17th at 7:30, and closes out on Sunday the 19th of November for a 2 o'clock p.m. matinee at the Kauffman Center of Kansas City on the Muriel Kauffman side. So it's the Kauffman side. There's the Miller-Nichols side. This is on the Muriel Kauffman side. For more information, you may call 816-471-7344 or go online to kcopera.org. We're speaking with Andrew and Craig, two of the climbers involved in all of this. You have to act it. You have to sing it. So there's no real dialogue. The story is told by your actions, your appearance, and by the words that you sing. Difficult to tell a story that way?
You know, I don't think so. When the music is such high quality and so well crafted, and the story is such a clear thing, it sort of plays itself.
He's being very modest because his vocal lines are impossibly difficult, and he sings them beautifully.
Craig kind of touched on this. The set is incredible. It goes, we're climbing all over the place. So it's not only a vocally athletic show, but a physically athletic show. And we're climbing and sweating in winter coats
all sorts of winter gear and pretending to freeze to death. But meanwhile, we're sopping wet.
Sopping wet. Yeah.
Well, they have to keep those patrons warm. not so much for you all
right,
in the show.
Right.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the others. You've mentioned a few names, but some of the others in the show as well.
Well, Beck Weathers is played by a fantastic baritone named Michael Mays.
His voice will blow you away. Yeah. It's a canon, and it's gorgeous.
Also an incredible actor. And from Texas, so he's got the...
He has the drawl down just right.
Accent.
Yeah, and Sarah Larson is a phenomenal singing actress as well. And she has the challenge of... whereas we are all able to climb all over the set, she is stuck in New Zealand. And so she is very geniusly set on one little block and lit. And so it looks like she's in a separate world. But she has to do all of her actions in a four-foot square space of real estate. And she does it brilliantly. You know, her only prop is a telephone.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be difficult.
Yeah, and we should also mention the chorus, because the Kansas City Opera Chorus is fantastic, and they have a significant part in this story, and some of the most beautiful and difficult music in the show.
And they are the voices of all of the ghosts of climbers that have died on the mountain. Mm-hmm. And they're all dressed in white and dressed in period climbing gear from different decades of climbing Mount Everest, and they're all in white, both because they're ghosts, but also because the entire set is white and becomes a projection screen for incredible projection work, and I feel terribly...
Elaine McCarthy did the projections, and they're gorgeous. She also did the projections for Jake Heggie's Moby Dick production that Leonard Folia, who directed this, did in Dallas and San Francisco and Washington.
It's an incredible production.
It's really beautiful, yeah. Robert Brill designed the set, and I'm a big fan. It's really beautiful work, all of his stuff.
If you missed what I said earlier, folks, they both originated these roles when it played in Opera Dallas. Down there. And so I guess sometimes it helps a performer and an actor at least to learn the basics of climbing, even if they've never climbed before. Did you do any of that?
Yeah, actually, this has been an incredible confluence of life events for myself. I was actually a rock climbing guide in my summers in college in Colorado, and I've done a fair amount of mountaineering in Colorado. And so I never imagined... Never my wildest dreams could I have imagined that one day I would be working with ropes and wearing harnesses, and I'm actually wearing my own parka and headlamp that I used in the late 90s, the same time period. And the costume designer, David Woolard, was thrilled when I showed up in Dallas with gear from the 90s because he was having a hard time finding stuff that looked period appropriate. So I'm getting to wear my own gear and use skills from a completely different part of my life. And it's been awesome. And actually, the same things that draw me to opera are kind of the same things that draw me to the mountains. That when you have something that is 100% physical and 100% emotional and 100% drama in an opera, and those same things exist in the mountains, that everything is just superlative and you feel like you're completely alive, but yet you are exhausted and spent, but you've never felt more alive. and I love that about the stage. I love that about climbing. So, and that is shown so well every single moment of this
challenges
opera.
In life are like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's always things coming up.
Absolutely.
You just have the perfect way to self-identify with your character. You're very lucky in that way. What about you?
Well, I don't have any climbing experience like Craig, but we pretend. Craig actually taught me a lot of stuff just in conversation while we were staging in Dallas, and he was teaching me to tie various knots and everything. So that was really helpful to kind of get me into that.
I was going
to
ask later, once your first run in Dallas was over, did you actually take him out climbing?
We didn't, but we were actually... There's a moment where Rob lowers Doug's body off of the what is supposed to be the Hillary Step, which is a very high, daunting cliff up high. And he lowers my body down, and then he rappels afterward. And so he actually does get to rappel in the show, and I got to teach him how to look like he knew what he was doing, and he looks awesome.
It's one of my favorite parts in the show.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, the show does open, as I said earlier, this Saturday, the 11th of November, with performances at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday the 15th at 7:30 p.m., Friday the 17th at 7:30, and Sunday the 19th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Kauffman Center, where the opera always happens here in Kansas City, on the Muriel Kauffman side. There's two theaters, actually. If you've never been to the Kauffman Center, there's two sides, the Muriel Kauffman side, the Miller Nichols side, both get pretty good use. In fact, there have been nights when there have been a performance on each side. They just stagger the opening times and the intermission times. This show does not, though, have an intermission. I guess it remains intense throughout the production.
Yeah, it goes by very fast. I think
75 minutes long, and make sure you use the restroom beforehand. And hold on to your seats, because it grabs you and doesn't let you go until the end. It is a thrilling, thrilling show.
You talked about the whole set is white. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Well, it's right now it's white in rehearsal, mm-hmm. But in performance, it's a projection screen. Mm-hmm. And so one of the first scenes is Rob Hall summiting Mount Everest. And there is a panning shot from the top of Everest, and you see all these mountains behind him. It looks like he's standing on top of the world and turning, and you see all the mountains of Nepal, of the Himalayas, panning behind him. It's brilliant. And then there are other times where it's a topographical map, and another time where it's a starry sky. It's phenomenal. It's really, really breathtaking.
You know, that's something else a lot of people don't know. It's actually in the country of Nepal, which is near the China border.
Yeah, uh-huh. Between Nepal and Tibet. Yeah.
And as far as from what I've read, there's never a problem getting permission to climb.
Well, there have been periods in time where the Nepalese government has closed access and the Tibetan government has closed access, but they have become keenly aware that the Chinese government, I should say, that they can make a lot of money selling climbing permits, mm-hmm. and it's been a very lucrative business for them. Tragically, since 1996, there have been two worse accidents in 2014 and 2015. 2014, there were some avalanches that tragically killed 16 Sherpas low on the slopes in the Khumbu Icefall, and in 2015, the horrible 2015 Nepalese earthquake caused more avalanches that I think called killed 16 Sherpas, and I think both times the climbing season was shut down and canceled.
Do you foresee a time when something like that, an avalanche, they'll have to close the mountain maybe permanently? It's going to be impossible to climb.
It's hard to imagine. I know that there, in other war-torn places, there are mountains that have been closed off in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. There are mountains that mountaineers are eager to get access to again. There's the eternal question of and drive of these mountaineers to conquer the mountains, but also conquer themselves. Mm-hmm. And George Mallory was famously asked in the 1920s, and he died attempting the mountain in 1924, and he was asked, why climb? Why do something that's so dangerous? And his famous answer was, because it's there. That to me, that doesn't fully answer the question. There are so many aspects of the why. Why would somebody do this? And for me personally, I love the mountains. I love climbing. And part of the adrenaline is the risk, but also learning to become a responsible mountaineer is learning how to mitigate risk. And for me, my tolerance for risk has been indirectly proportional to my age. And now that I have a wife and a daughter, I have absolutely no interest in climbing Everest. There's too much risk. Yeah. But for some, they feel like they can take on the risk.
Sure. Well, the number to call for more information, 816-471-7344, or you can go online. You can make your arrangements online as well, kcopera.org, where you can read about the show. They probably have a lot of pictures on there, learn about these gentlemen as well. Thank you so much for being with us. Craig Verm, who sings the role of Doug Hansen, one of the climbers, and Anu Bidlock, who plays or sings the role, he is a tenor, sings the role of Rob Hall, two of the people involved in the Lyric Opera presentation of Everest, and climbs will continue clear through the 19th of November. Check on their website for exact times for all of the performances. Well, I've given them to you, but just for your own needs. It'll be at the Kauffman Center on the Muriel Kauffman side, kcopera.org, and the number again to call, 816-471-7344. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. We're going to take a short break now. Kind of climb down, shall we say. We're going to speak with the Native Sons and Daughters of Kansas City, a historical organization. They're going to talk about their 45th annual awards banquet, where they're going to honor former Councilman Alvin Brooks. So we will return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. And you can hear this show, as a matter of fact, one of the podcast shows. If you think about it, the show really never has to end. You can always listen to it again and again and again. And how frightening is that? Welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. You heard Russ mention a few minutes ago the Kansas International Film Festival is going on this week. There will be films from all over the world being screened. You can go to kansasfilm.com to learn more information. Films will continue through November the 9th. It'll all happen at the Glenwood Arts Center in Overland Park, Kansas, 3707 West 95th Street. That's the Ranch March Shopping Center on 95th Street. The Kansas International Film Festival through the 9th, going on right now. Well, we're going to talk in this segment of the show about the Native Sons and Daughters of Greater Kansas City and their 45th annual awards banquet. This year, they're going to honor Alvin Brooks, former policeman, former police board member, former city councilman, and his group Against Crime shows up all over town at scenes of crime, unfortunately, usually. You'll see him there. Very well known in the community and has been for a long time. The banquet will take place on Tuesday, November the 14th at the Grand Ballroom of the Convention Center. And with me to tell us all about it, Nancy Elder, one of our guests as well. She is the second vice president. She was actually born and raised here, which makes her an original Native daughter.
That's true. That's true.
Retired businesswoman, currently involved in many not-for-profit organizations. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Steve Noel is with us as well. I have known this man for such a long time. Seventh grade goes back at least that far.
Those were the good old days.
Steve is currently still the president of the Jackson County Historical Society, still holds a seat on the Prairie Village City Council.
Do both.
And doing both, and will be coming involved with the Native Sons and Daughters in the future.
Yes. Steve will be our president beginning January 1.
And will you be his second vice president?
I will be his first vice president.
His first vice president. Oh, well, they moved you up a slot.
We're gonna shake things up a little bit.
Thank you.
You start off as first vice president. You get to oversee the Outstanding Kansas City event. And then you get to kind of take a rest for a year and build your energy up.
Well, let's talk about the banquet first. You have one every year. I remember I had Marilyn May on a couple of years ago.
Yes.
And she was very excited to be honored by your organization.
Yes.
You're honoring Alvin Brooks this year.
Yes. He is a very special person in Kansas City and very well loved and certainly very well respected. And for us to honor him is going to be a very special evening. People can come and talk to him with questions, and it'll be a one-time thing. You know, he's 85 years old himself this year, so we all know that this is going to be a one-time thing for him.
Yeah, I've met him several times when he came to the radio station.
Yes.
Here. Still quite with it.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
Yeah. The website you can go to learn more information, nsdkc.org. And there's a number to call, 913-207-3310.
Would be for tickets for our event Tuesday night,
okay,
the
14th. And you can learn information about that when you go to either one of those places. The Native Sons and Daughters is a historical-minded organization.
Yeah, we are. This is our 85th anniversary, and the Native Sons and Daughters really strives to preserve and then share in whatever the best methods are the history not only of Kansas City but the Kansas City region. Our major activities now are with the honoring an individual once a year of the Outstanding Kansas City. But we have an ongoing program of placing historical markers. They don't stand out real boldly, but they're a beautiful dark blue with silver or gold lettering, depending on the year. And there are well over 100 now that have been placed. And they're in locations and commemorating events, buildings, sites, eras throughout the Kansas City area. They're almost exclusively outdoors, so you can just be on the lookout for them and stop and learn some local history. One of my initiatives, hopefully in the next year, is we're going to compile a book that will, number one, make it possible for people they so desire to start anywhere and follow a map and check out all of these markers, but also to pull all that information together. We'll probably have some form of print with it, but also, as with most things today, it'll be available on our website.
Yeah, give an example, one or two, of where one of these markers are and what people can go look.
Okay. Last year we honored the Jackson County Sports Authority and Jackson County Executive Frank White, legendary Royals player. Our marker for that is actually in the area between Arrowhead Stadium and Kauffman Stadium and really gives the history of the Sports Authority, which is a little-known entity, but you wonder, like, who owns these? How did this all come into being? Another example, I think 2 years ago, we recognized the Greater Kansas City Restaurant Association. And downtown on Walnut Street in Oppenheimer Park is a marker that really gives some insights into the fact that right there, anybody remember the name Myron Green?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Myron Green organization started in a building on that site, as did the Restaurant Association. So all these different topics, you can learn a lot. It takes 5-10 minutes to read them. We do some geographical ones. Anybody know where Harlem is?
Oh, Harlem in Kansas City? No, I don't.
No, well,
just east of the downtown Wheeler Airport.
Okay,
on the east side of the bridge,
and on the north side of the
little township of Harlem.
Oh, okay. I Cook Paint came to mind there.
They were North Kansas City. This is one of the original areas, but nobody would know that heritage but for the fact that we've put a marker there to encourage people to seek them out, learn a little, expand their horizons, and then, you know, obviously if you want more information, we have some great other history organizations that can help provide that additional historical background. But it's kind of fun. We've got them literally all over Jackson, Clay, Platte. Don't know we've gotten into Johnson County yet, but that will come.
Yes, we recently rededicated a marker in Overland Park on the old...
That's right, the Strang Line.
Strang Line building, I'm sorry. It had been taken down when they were renovating the building, and they found it. We did a rededication, and now it's on an outside wall where you can see it to learn the history of the Strang Line.
There's a Strang Line road in Olathe. Is it connected to that?
It's part of the original line that they formed that was connecting Westport and Overland Park.
The Strang Line was actually an interurban trolley that really started in Westport and went out to Olathe and included kind of Sake through Merriam as one of the first suburban commuter mass transits in Kansas City. We talk about our streetcars today, but we've had them for a while.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fun. We really don't have any boundaries on the history topics. We try and partner with a local organization or a site where we're not going to force one of these markers on anyone's property. They have to share our enthusiasm. And if they do, then we collaborate with them. It takes up to about a year at times between getting the permission and writing the copy and then actually getting the markers made.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Michael, we will also be recognizing the Kansas City Crime Commission at our event on Tuesday, the 14th of November. And the marker that we have collaborated and partnered with them will be shown that night. And then it is going to be installed somewhere at 14th in Baltimore, relative to the Hotel President, because that's where the first meeting of the Crime Commission was held. So we try to go back and put it in a very historical place.
Well, that's very important to Mr. Brooks as well.
He's very excited about this recognition.
His presence is always there when a crime is committed, usually a young person, but others as well.
Yes,
and
yes.
He's been very vocal about that over the years. Yeah. Well, what else do you do as a second vice president?
This is my most important responsibility, but I also, of course, attend our regular monthly board meetings to agree with where we're going to put a marker or who we are partnering with or whom we want to recognize as an outstanding Kansas Cityan. Also, I'm a member of an organization that has been helping with their silent auction for the last several years, and that's the Independent Order of Foresters. We have quite a bit of silent auction experience with other groups, and we come and help monitor the tables and help with the delivery of the items and so forth. So I'm kind of doing a dual role this next week when I'm second vice president of Native Sons and also a part of the Foresters group.
You've been involved a long time?
I'm sorry?
You've been involved with this organization or historical-based organizations? I know Steve has whole life.
Yes, I've we've been involved, my husband and I. The Foresters is a community members helping members. It's a fraternal benefit society. And we got into the silent auction business with Hope House, with what used to be Midwest Foster Care, which is now Foster Adopt Connect. We handle their gala. We are now also involved with Native Sons doing their auctions.
Let's talk about the night of the 14th. It's going to be in the Grand Ballroom of the Convention Center. Tell them what's all going to be available to them.
Well,
an auction, I guess?
We have a reception. Mm-hmm. We'll have wine and a reception and the silent auction beginning at 6. Dinner is at 7. And then our program and awards come at 8 o'clock. And it will last probably 30 to 45 minutes, and then they can pick up their auction items. And everything should be over with by 9, which is still early enough for people to get home and...
To black tie?
Black tie, optional. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And we do have quite a few who are in tuxedos. Ladies in certainly their nice, beautiful cocktail dresses. And it is a beautiful evening. It really is.
Who all have you honored over the years? Thinking back, it's Mr. Brooks this year. It's been George Brett. It's been Marilyn May.
Frank White. Julia Irene Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Moore with KMBC for his work with the Dream Factory. I'm going backwards. Kay Barnes, our former mayor. Jim and Virginia Stowers, of course, in 2004. Buck O'Neill and Carl DiCapo in 2001, Whitney and Day Kerr, Ewing Kaufman himself in 1986,
sure.
Bill Dunn, of course, Charlie Weaver, pardon me,
Weaver.
Honorable Charles Wheeler, former mayor.
The Honorable Dr. Charles.
Dr. Charles.
A doctor
Wheeler,
and an attorney, yeah.
Miller Nichols, Lester Milgram. Carol Marinovich, former mayor of Kansas City, Kansas, Wyandotte County, Barnett and Shirley Helzberg. As you can tell, we've had a number of very prominent people in Kansas City that have done a lot for our city and our area.
And you refer to them as Citizen of the Year?
Outstanding
Kansas City. Well, they all fit in that category.
Yes.
Yeah, Marilyn May as well. I remember I interviewed her.
We do an interview with the Outstanding Kansas Cityan, and during dinner we pass around cards for people to write a question they might like to have answered, and Frank Bowl will be the interviewer, and he will talk to Alvin Brooks about things in his life, as well as having Mr. Brooks answer these questions that people will raise.
Sounds like an exciting evening. Tuesday, November the 14th, it'll happen in the Grand Ballroom of the Convention Center. Awards banquet honoring former Councilman Brooks. I find his career interesting. He was a police officer himself.
Yes.
And went to the police board. And then became an elected official with the city, ran for mayor 1 year.
Yes.
Has an outstanding track record working with the community.
And he's a very, very special person.
Yeah. You probably know him well.
I do, and I will tease you a little bit about something. My maiden name was Brooks.
Oh.
So when he sees me, he always gives me a hug and calls me Cuz.
Cuz.
So I'm sure that will happen again that Tuesday night.
Once again, the website you can go to for even further information or to confirm what you've already heard, nsdkc.org, or you can call the number 913-207-3310. Will someone in particular be answering that phone to make arrangements?
Yes. Linda Dillon is our person handling all of the reservations for that night, and that is her phone number to answer for reservations and or silent auction items.
An outstanding evening, learning all about what the organization does, the historical markers as well. I know Steve recently wrote a book covering some of the things going on in Kansas City. He has if you know Steve, you know he's a collector of almost everything.
And as Bruce Matthews, my co-author, described, there's a fine line between hoarding and collecting. But if you're doing it in the name of history, it's definitely collecting.
Well, it's great that you put it in a book. Someone besides you and your family can see all this.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We, I love the everything about the history of Kansas City. All those artifacts and souvenirs that help people recall events, places, situations that they were part of, and it all comes back to the common appreciation for the history of Kansas City.
Now, you've been with the Jackson County Historical Society for quite a while.
Actually, I was understating myself. I've been telling people 12 years, and then I did the math, and so it was 13 years this past September. I'm going to retire at the end of the year, but I'll still be involved on the board. And, you know, we recently acquired the what's called the Wilburn photo collection from Chris Wilburn and Associates as they closed. This is a massive, hundreds of thousands of images of Kansas City in almost any topic you can think of. And we're organizing them, and this is our next big initiative with Jackson County Historical Society. So hopefully in a couple of years, you can go online through our website and go down memory lane.
That's right. But you're not really retiring because you're taking over this other position.
No, I'm really not. Don't tell my wife.
Don't listen, Marianne. No. he'll be doing probably even more. Probably a lot of more fine markers around town.
Well, we certainly intend to keep that heritage up too. So
we are having people contact our organization now to place markers, to order markers. Recently, the R.T. Coles Junior High contacted us to order a marker. The alumni class of that school, which is no longer a building in operation, even a building, the class of 1954 wanted to put a marker on the location of the school. And that dedication was just a couple of weeks ago down at the Black Archives.
Explain for the folks, they might like to know, what's the process? If you think a historical marker needs to be in your area, what should they do?
They should contact our website, which is it gives you quite a few choices on what to click on, but that's the best way to start, because I believe there is a markers heading that will give you the chairman of that committee and a phone number or an email, and then you work with him and his committee, and we partner in the cost, or in the case of the R.T. Coles, they paid for the whole thing and just had us order it, and it is in the line and the layout that we have used for all of our markers. And they selected the words, and it is a front and back. Oftentimes it's just a front marker, but in the case, for example, of the Jackson County Sports Authority, it has wording on both sides. So, and it does stand alone always in concrete if they are the outdoor markers.
Are you looking for a certain period, like how many years back? Does that matter?
I think it's more of a group or people that have the passion for it. If they feel that topic, that era or event is important, we want to help them, number one, have as much information as possible, and then we collaborate. How can we kind of distill that down so that it fits on a marker that's about 48 inches wide and about 3 feet high, that it really then shares the essence of the information in the way that that group that is initiating it, that they want it presented. So it's very much a collaboration.
Yeah. It's just all, I guess, to publicize what happened when. Sometimes we lose our past.
Preserving history. Mm-hmm. Preserving history is our big, big number one topic.
I'm often surprised at people who, you know, don't really go back any further than the 60s. I was very much alive then, so I remember things that they don't even know about.
You know, Michael, history is really just telling and retelling of stories. You know, it used to start around people around a campfire or markings on a cave wall. You know, we've gone through the whole communications process to now. There's books, but there's often a DVD that goes with the book to enhance that sharing experience. But it really is just sharing the stories of the past with others in the present and for future generations to be able to have that information.
When science fiction writer Orson Scott Card was on the show, he made an interesting comment. He said, there is nothing so unusual that it could not happen again.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So we have to keep track of our history.
What did President Truman say? You know, you're bound to failure if you haven't learned the history that came before.
Yeah.
So there's a
you learn from it, and you try to live according a better way.
Yeah.
We always want to provide a better way for our families.
There's several historical organizations in the area, one of them being the Native Sons and Daughters of Greater Kansas City. And their annual banquet is coming up this Tuesday, November 14th, in the Grand Ballroom of the Convention Center. It's their 45th annual awards banquet. And they'll be honoring former police officer, former police board member, and former councilman Alvin Brooks. At that time, you will see him out at the site of tragedies. Just making a presence there to keep people aware.
He will mingle with the crowd and be very, very much at home, as he is always with people.
Sure. Well, once again, the website, nsdkc.org, and the number you can call for more information, 913-207-3310. That's the number to call. Thanks so much, both of you, for being with us. Nancy Elder, the second vice president of the Native Sons and Daughters of Kansas City. She was born and she was raised here, so she is an authentic Native daughter of Kansas City.
That's
also
right.
A retired businesswoman, currently involved in many non-for-profit organizations, as well as Native Sons and Daughters. And Steve Knoll. Oh, the name of your book, where they can get it?
Kansas City, Our Collective Memories. It's available through the Jackson County Historical Society website at Made in Kansas City, at Webster House, and... there's a
Is
few
it on
other.
Amazon? I'm not sure.
No, we're not on Amazon yet, but yeah. We'll be there someday.
I'm sure you will soon. I have a copy. It's a very interesting book. Lots of pictures from your personal collection.
Thank you.
Which I had a chuckle at when I saw it, because I know what a collector you've been over the years. I've known Steve since seventh grade. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Both of you for
Thank
being
you, Michael,
with us.
Thank you, Michael, for having us.
Jazz Insider will not be here, but never fear. Mark will be here to fill in for him, and he's going to be nothing will change. He'll be playing some Mark Andrus. He'll be playing some of the finest jazz music you'll hear anywhere in town. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.